The following was recorded in front of a live studio audience at the Studio 21 Podcast Cafe. This is the United Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Quirky Dog Podcast, inspired by some of the quirkiest dogs you can ever imagine and the owners who love them. This podcast is brought to you by the quirky couple themselves, Scott and Jess Williams. Their aim is to educate and entertain. Here's Scott and Jess.
Welcome, guys, and happy Wednesday. Today we have a very, very special guest with us. I cannot wait to introduce you, but first we're going to start with the quirky tip of the day. All right, today's quirky tip of the day is brought to you by Viagen. Viagen Pets is based out of Texas. They are an awesome cloning company. And I want to let you guys know that if you are considering cloning your pet, you can actually get a tissue biopsy while they are alive and well. So a lot of people think, oh, you know, when they pass away, I have to make sure I preserve a certain part of them to send that way. You can do this while your, you know, dog or your cat are alive and well and feeling really healthy. They recommend the best time to do this is during routine veterinary visits, like for vaccination or something like that, or if you're spaying and neutering, you know, some sort of dental procedure like where the dog is already under, it's easy to do. But if you are considering cloning, sending the biopsy and storing the tissue is the lower end of the cost, so that's less cost prohibitive than the actual cloning itself.
Much lower.
Yeah, so be conscious of that if you're thinking about it. When we did the interview with Viagen, we were thinking in our heads, maybe we should clone Jimmy. It's not that much money. Like, we should send it away. So just be conscious that that is an option. Okay, so for our actual quirky tip, today our guest is Shannon Cutts from Texas. We are so excited to have her. She is an animal communicator, but she also calls herself a highly sensitive and animal intuitive, which is really awesome. It's like another layer of that. And we want you to check out her podcast. We are actually going to be on her podcast as guests next Wednesday. And her podcast is Let's Talk to Animals. And you can find that podcast by either going to our website, which is linked in the description, or you can go straight to letstalktoanimals.buzzsprout.com and hear more about what she has to say. So Shannon, without further ado, welcome and thank you so much for joining us.
How you doing?
I'm so excited to be here. It's wonderful. And we've got a Texas theme going on.
Yes, I know. We got Texas sponsors. We got Texas guests. It's great. So tell us a little bit about how you came to be what you are as a, you know, animal. What do you say? A highly sensitive, an animal sensitive. What did you say?
I do specialize in highly sensitive versus anxious pets, but it's part of the whole story. The animals have told me that I'm an animal sensitive and intuitive, and that has been a really interesting journey for me. So just to quickly answer your question, because of course, you know, the call when it comes, it's something that we could talk about it for hours because it's so special and it feels so personal for each one of us that love an animal and each one of us that feels like we're receiving messages from them. But for me, I was the person who honestly, I'm in my fifth decade of life now, and I honestly didn't grow up around people who talk about intuition, who recognize the possibility of interspecies connection and communication on such a deep level. And so I really thought it was something that only special people could do. They were born with a gift. And I just thought it was kind of like winning the lottery or American Idol, you know, it was just or The Voice or whatever's trending right now. So I hired animal communicators. I could feel that the animals in my life had information to share with me that could help me improve their life. And I couldn't receive it. I just had that mental block. And so for years and years, decades, really, I worked with animal communicators for all types of different things, from end-of-life transitions to animals that would go missing. Apparently, my flock is particularly adventurous. So I had several missing pet issues to what I can politely call interspecies family harmony or lack thereof, when one family member just doesn't think that adding another family member was really all that necessary. And so I really got this beautiful experiential crash course in the difference that animal communication can make, and started to build some traction on Instagram, sharing my interspecies family videos, and popped over into the dodo and ended up My mom thinks it's hysterical because we went viral with her in her pajamas and my tortoise following her around begging for treats. So if anyone wants to check that out, just Google tortoise begs grandma for treats. And then one morning, shortly before my entire life was about to implode, I was meditating and I heard the words, "You are an animal sensitive and intuitive." And I thought, that is just fascinating, but I have no idea what they're talking about. Luckily, I was just beginning to study intuition and I booked a session for my 50th birthday. My dad asked me what I wanted because it was a big birthday. And I said, I want a session with my intuitive teacher. I have a big question to ask. And she immediately responded with, "Animal communication, that's a great new career path for you," which was interesting because I was getting out of a decade of freelance writing work and had kind of burned out with that. And I said, well, you know, I have kind of been thinking about taking a class because by that time, it was something that was bubbling up in the public consciousness. We were more aware of what my first teacher, Sonia Choquette, called the sixth sense or our spidey sense or our vibes. And so a friend and I had been chatting about it. And she said, what do you mean you're thinking about it? The animals are waiting to talk with you. You're a modern day shaman. You should be doing it already. So I was like, fast forward, you know, a week and I had enrolled in a class and it was a rocky path, as true heart callings often are. My father went into hospice and my best friend died and my relationship of 15 years imploded and then my box turtle ran away and it just turned into this. And the animal communication was my anchor. It became my safe place to feel the heartbeat of our planet, to feel connected to the cycle of life, to realize that I'm never alone. And yeah, there are friends all around us.
Yeah.
All around us, all the time. And so much, you know, if you ever have had that experience, maybe someone who's listening today has that experience of looking back over your life and so many things that felt so disjointed, like, why am I doing this job? Or why am I in this relationship? Or why am I having these experiences? And only looking back, you're like, oh, I got that from this and this from that. And suddenly it all starts to make this beautiful, benevolent sense.
Yeah, completely. That is an amazing story.
That has been my experience.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. It was such a tumultuous beginning, but it really does seem, it's nice when you call it your anchor now, because it really seems like you were meant to be here. So that's nice. Thank you for sharing that with us. So you're specializing mostly in one-on-one sessions is what I'm kind of gathering. You do all species. This is not just if you own a dog.
All species. All species are welcome. In fact, I've discovered the more I do this, that so many interspecies families do have 3 or 4 or 5 different species represented. And it's quite fascinating. There are some family members, as I'm sure you're aware on the Quirky Dog and in your profession with canine healing, there are some family members that can need a little bit more attention than others. Yeah. Need or demand.
Yeah.
But at the heart of the matter, everybody in the family plays a role. And that's something that's really fascinating to look at in animal communication. And then when behavior issues or health issues crop up, to look at the deeper underlying reasons, as we were chatting about before we hit on air, we can look at a behavior like anxiety and start to peel back the layers of that onion and look at, okay, is this a situational thing? Is this something where we can trace it back to a certain event or a certain time period when it started to kind of rear its ugly head? Or has there been an innate sensitivity that spans back even predating the anxious period in that animal's life, and start to dig into some of the genetics and the animal's perspective? What is going on with them? And how long has it been going on? And what do they really need to feel safe? And that's where I find animal communication, it's an addition to the modern pet parent's toolkit. There are things that animal communication absolutely is perfectly placed to address. And there are also many other paths we can follow And for me, I find that often with my client, it begins with getting the pet's perspective, just asking the questions, finding out the information. How is that pet feeling in their body? How are they feeling in their heart? What is their relationship with other family members, with the neighbor's cat or the down the street, the dogs or whatever's going on? And then from there, it's a lot easier to create a plan of action if one is needed. Sometimes all that is needed, just like for us human animals, is to vent or to ask a question themselves or to make a request. And that's the resolution that was needed. Sometimes there's a longer path to follow. There's, of course, we come together and we have these soul agreements and we're meant to learn and grow together. And so sometimes that means, okay, well, this particular issue is just causing a lot of situational anxiety or reactivity. And so maybe we do need to bring in some training. Maybe we bring in some behavior desensitization. Maybe we bring in some supplements or tweak the nutrition in some way. Maybe there's something we can do with the living situation. But it really starts with gathering good information that we can then work from. And that includes adding the animal's voice to the conversation. So that's really where my heart is. My pet passion, if you will.
How do you find your clients? Are they receptive to the pet's perspective? Like, do you get some, you know, pushback? How do you find them receiving the information sometimes?
Well, you know, there is an art in how the information is shared. That could be the sensitivity part. I'll probably be unpacking that information for the rest of my life. But in most cases, I find that the animals know exactly how to deliver even the toughest information in a way that their precious human can receive it with an open heart. And if something comes across to me that feels a little bit harsh, I'm thinking of a few conversations I've had recently where I've been like, do you really want me to say it that way? You know, or are you sure that's exactly what you mean? Because of course we're working with a sensory and an intuitive information inflow that then at some point, this is really where I work with students who actually want to learn animal communication, because many of my clients then pop over into my classes. But then at some point, it's got to get popped over into the left brain mind, decoded, translated, and become shareable as words. And so that's really where I can have that extra conversation with the animal and ask, is there another way that I can share the information? Because my energy also is a part of the equation.
Yeah.
And if I'm feeling some reservation or some like, oh my God, I don't want to be the, like, don't kill the messenger, please.
The bearer of bad news.
So
yeah.
Yes. And so that's where, you know, as part of my practicum when I was studying, I undertook to do 100 sessions in 100 days. And I just went to town talking with people all over the world from all walks of life, of all ages and life stages, with all kinds of different animals, and really getting a kind of a social and communications crash course in talking through different kinds of issues and recognizing at the beginning, in the middle, and the end, it's a conversation. So I don't tend to attract people who are wanting to just fix their pet, just put a Band-Aid on the situation. I once had it. Here's a perfect example of what I mean by that. I was early in my career, if you know, hanging out a shingle, going pro, letting the community know, here I am. I'm at a booth at a local charity event outside, and this young woman comes marching up to me with a Great Dane and about six of her nearest and dearest in tow. And she announces to me, can you fix my Great Dane? He's autistic. Everybody says so.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, if everybody says so, well, why then? Of course, you know, of course, in my head, I'm thinking, I'm not sure it's the dog.
Yeah.
Problem.
Yeah.
Being the hopeful diplomat that I was attempting to be, I just handed her my card and said, you know, feel free to reach out when you feel ready. But that's not the type, the mindset of pet parents that I tend to attract. I work at a very deep heart and soul level. And that's, you know, we have to follow our own passions and interests. And I just find it marvelous and miraculous that out of all of the animals and all of the humans alive on this planet right now, how did we specifically find each other?
Yeah.
This particular human and this particular animal. I mean, what are the chances?
Yeah.
No. I was just saying that last night about my dog. You were. I said that exact same thing.
You were. I think it was even this morning. Yeah. What was the quote you said?
It's like, you have one opportunity to live this life. He gets his one opportunity to be in that carnation. Here we are. We found each other together.
Yeah, but he said it more rhetorically, right? And he's like, can you imagine? You know, there's such a short time on Earth and we found each other. And I looked at him and I said, are you talking to me or Jimmy? And he said, well, Jimmy. He said, Jimmy, of course. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, but yeah, he was just explaining to our 11-year-old border collie last night that it was just a miracle of sorts. Yeah. No, that's funny.
I love that. And of course, your border collie is probably way ahead of us all and has already figured that out. Yeah. But I often, when I ask animals how they choose their humans, because our animals do choose us, and that's often why we feel so compelled to adopt one animal. And maybe, you know, we just don't feel that same call to another. We go to a shelter or rescue, or we go to a breeder. And why do you bring home the one that you choose? And I believe that it's because there's this inner vibe, this heart-to-heart connection that was created before we came here into these bodies, and we recognize one another. And when I ask the animals what that's like for them, time and time again, they have shown me what honestly looks like an old school job board with a lot of like newspaper, old school newspaper ads on little thumbtacks, and they're all jostling around and they're all like, which one's for me? Which one's? And then they'll grab one and say, this one's mine, or this is perfect for me. And it's such a good match. And it's easy to forget that when problems, or shall we say opportunities, arise, it's easy to lapse more into why me, or what's wrong with you, or these types of mindsets. And so that is part of the discipline. My late best friend used to love to remind me when I would get in those places that we're here to learn how to grow in wisdom and learn to love better. And if that's really our heart's intent, our soul's choice, then well, we are going to receive opportunities to do just that. It's kind of like praying for patience.
Yeah.
You want to think about that one really carefully before you go down that road, right?
Yeah. No, I love that perspective. So let's talk a little bit about this highly sensitive animal compared to the anxious animal, because we talk about anxiety a lot on our podcast. Yeah. Anxiety has gotten a lot more common in, you know, the veterinary world. Yeah. People are diagnosing it. We're seeing it a lot with training. Tell us a little bit what you see to be the differences and tweed those apart a bit for us.
Yes, this is a fascinating topic, and it all kind of began for me when I ran across the work of Dr. Elaine Aron, who's become kind of seminal in the field of psychology and mental health for identifying the highly sensitive person temperament trait. This affects about 20% of all human animals, and what it amounts to, there's this, you know, as with every trait, there's this trout, love it. As with every trait, there's a spectrum from mildly affected to all volume knobs turned up to 10, but there's kind of a range of sensitivity with all of our native senses to bright lights, to loud sounds, to strong vibrations, even the booming bass or the high treble of a live music event, to social interactions, crowds, weather events, barometric pressure changes, temperature extremes, all kinds, anything that could cause a reaction or a response in the physical organism. It just, for these individuals, about 20% of humans, all their dials are just turned up a little higher than the rest, which is why some people, they just march right into a crowd full of dancing, grooving people, and they are having the time of their lives. And others like me are cowering under the couch in the bathroom. Like, yeah, that's pretty much the first thing I do when I walk into a room with them crowd. I'm like, where's the ladies? Yeah. So, yeah. I need to know where my safe space is. So that really has informed my awareness when I'm speaking with animals who have been labeled as anxious. And I'm not saying that that label is wrong, but what is so interesting. Okay, come here. This is what this bird does.
Petal needs you.
This little petal, what she does is she jumps onto the floor, which everyone knows is not permitted, right? And then she starts nibbling her mommy's toes, which is just, it's so endearing and also very painful. So this, of course, intrigued scientists. And so the researchers started studying other fairly well-known animal species and discovered, they've discovered over 100 different animal species, non-human animal species, who are similarly affected by the highly sensitive temperament trait, and that has evolutionary advantages. Not to go too far down the geeky research road, but it's fascinating to take a look at, you know, a species population where 80% are charging into the crowd and 20% are naturally inclined to hold back. What would that look like if you had a weather event or predation or something like that going on? And so often when a pet parent does come to me, it's because there is some kind of an issue brewing or there's an obvious anxiety response. And so there's kind of a label or there's what I call a working hypothesis. I think my pet might be suffering from anxiety, trauma, etc. And so talking with the pet, I can get a perspective of, okay, maybe it does spike in certain situations. Maybe it did stem from a particular incident. And this can especially crop up with rescued pets because that new parent doesn't often know the background and the prior history. Only the animal knows that perspective. So if we want to find out, we've got to ask the animal what happened. Mm-hmm. But if I'm starting to hear and feel and see and sense, because for me, I get a lot of physical responses when I'm talking with animals as well. They actually show me through my body what's going on with them, which can be a little uncomfortable. They're having digestive issues, but there's lots of information that flows in through multiple pathways. And if I'm getting a sense that this animal is chronically and on kind of a high volume, high alert setting, then what we do is we start trying to turn down the volume on those inputs. It doesn't mean that there may not still be an anxiety issue. For instance, I'm a highly sensitive person on my best day. I'm still probably going to try to avoid the boom, 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 even of the UPS truck outside. I still am probably not going to naturally gravitate to crowds and things like that. But there are days that I feel quite calm and very centered. And there are days that something has created anxiety in me. So we're more looking for how do we create an ideal environment where this animal who may have high sensitivity and some anxiety, where they can thrive. And so we have to be a scientist a little bit and experiment and try turning down the volume on some of those inputs, try some creative training or behavior modification strategies when the anxiety response gets spiked. But also if we start to see the overall level of anxiety decreasing because that animal is not unprepared when thunder happens or when there's a party going on at the home or when there's work, there's construction work being done outside or whatever's going on, we can start to see that their fight or flight response isn't constantly getting triggered.
Yeah. No, so that's fascinating.
A multi-level approach, but it's so interesting to be like, And what I often find with my pet parent clients is that when they start to discover that a little bit more about the highly sensitive pet trait, they start looking back at their own life and going, you know what? I think I might be highly sensitive too.
Well, that's a little bit where I was headed and why I wanted to touch on this, because when you first said this to me, obviously dogs are intuitive. They're man's best friend, this, that, and the other, you know, all animals, but we specifically talk dogs on this podcast.
Of course.
And the highly sensitive, sometimes we have dogs where they work a certain way with one person in the family, and it they seem very, you know, dysregulated, everything else. And then the other three family members, you don't see any of that behavior. Or we take the leash and you don't see any of that behavior. Where on the flip side, there's certain dogs that, whether we've had the dog at our house for 2 weeks, it's showing the same behaviors. And we personally, as a couple and as professionals, call that genetic anxiety versus, you know, the situational anxiety or whatever. But I do like the concept of highly sensitive, because they may be more highly sensitive to their owner's own emotions and everything else. So it's interesting that you explain it that way. And I like to look at it from that perspective.
I have a question.
Absolutely.
I have a question about that. Oh, yes, please.
Absolutely.
Do you ever tactfully suggest that maybe that the pet is not in the right home? Because some of the homes are very hectic. They're not going to calm down. The dog is ultra sensitive. There's kids fighting. There's all kinds of things going on that the adults can't control. And the dog is suffering because of that. And I've personally worked with a dog that was great with us, but these two dogs would fight with each other at home. But they'd only fight when the kids started fighting with each other. That was the trigger. And they couldn't, you know what I mean? There was so many other triggers going on. And these dogs were just victims of this energy in this home. And they couldn't even get the humans under control, let alone deal with the dogs, you know? And it was tough because there's only so much you can do. And you can explain it to them and they can agree with you. But it's just a lot. It's a lot to take on. You know what I mean?
It is a lot to take on. And looking back in my Rolodex, and I've facilitated hundreds upon hundreds of sessions, I cannot pinpoint a moment when that has come up. It feels like it may just be that I have not attracted pet parents that have that level of chaos going on. It may just be because the nature of the communications, that animal was not specifically requesting to be rehomed.
Yeah.
That would be the only time I would address it, because my job as an animal communicator is to be the animal's voice, the animal's advocate. So the pet, what's interesting is when a pet parent does come to me with their own version of events or stories or what's taking place, then my job is to kind of filter out all of that and ask the animal, what's going on from your perspective?
Yeah.
Because as you so rightly highlighted, often the animal's behavior, because we're here to grow in wisdom and learn to love better, we have these soul agreements where we are mirroring and modeling for each other a calmer, kinder way to be together, especially when it gets that specific, when the animals are only fighting, when the children start fighting. Well, then that becomes a really interesting dialogue to explore. See, and the other piece is that because I'm just sharing the pet's perspective.
Right.
It's not my role to make my suggestions. I'm not there. You ask me what I think about something, I'm as likely as the next person to tell you.
Yeah.
But is that what's being requested of me? If the animal said to me, I want a different home, by all means, I will find the kindest, highest vibration way to share that with their person. I have found that sometimes, and I don't work specifically with missing animals at this time. I actually refer out to a colleague, a team of mine that has helped me with my own missing animal cases. But it's really interesting to take a look at when pets leave, why they leave, and what's the deeper intention under, not saying that all pets leave because they're not in the right home, but there can be other soul agreements that are happening and that are going on. And so if an animal really, really does believe they're in the wrong space, or they're not with the human that they're meant to be with for this leg of their journey here on earth, you may see something like that happening. So that's a whole other track that we could go down and explore, but it's such a valuable question.
And I can see how it's not your job, given what you're offering. Yeah. Another thing that I've seen a lot that's kind of in alignment with what you've been talking about is there's not been a lot of them, but over the 20 plus years, there's been just a handful of people that are obviously very sensitive individuals, very bright, very caring. They go to the shelter and they get the most difficult dog in the shelter. And it's so heartbreaking because I'm trying to help them with this dog. And it's just, it's more than they can handle, but they were compelled to bring this dog home with them. And and then I'll hear from them again, and they went and got another dog, and it is almost equally as difficult as the first dog. And they just feel this need to, no matter how many dogs are there, it's like they the one that nobody wants, they have to help that dog, but the dog has got so much trouble that it's making their lives more difficult. And it could be that somebody like you could help them maybe just smooth out these issues, because us as trainers can only do so much, because it's really, there's a lot more going on there than just behavior. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Or I should say obedience training.
Right. That kind of that top down linear approach that we're like this one thing versus we may need to look at a whole spectrum of supports that we bring in. And it's, I would imagine that it can be challenging for the two of you when a client views you that way. It's like, you're going to come in, wave your magic wand, and everybody's going to get along. It's also interesting to take a look. I have that exact problem with houseplants. My mother complains a lot because we'll go to a store and there are all these vibrant, healthy houseplants. And then there's this one poor bedraggled soul in the corner. It costs exactly the same as the healthy ones. And I'm like, oh my God, I need to
that
save
one.
It. So yes, I know. And it's got some fungus and it's like, you know, and so we have to kind of check back in with ourselves and ask, you know, is this really help?
Yeah. Well, and I like that you said,
well equipped.
You said earlier that it could be an opportunity. Maybe it's an opportunity for this person's growth or something else. And I'm glad when you looked back in your Rolodex, you didn't say, oh yeah, once a week, I definitely say the animal should be rehomed. Because as far as people wanting to use your services, I'm like, oh my God, maybe people aren't going to call. Okay. So I want to talk about this. So if somebody's listening, and I have done sessions before with dogs who have passed, and I have found great solace in animal communication. I am a firm believer in it. If someone wants to work with you specifically for their animals, what's the step? What does that look like? Give a little sales pitch here, a little spiel about how that would go with you.
A little. Well, for me, it really starts with that feeling, that call to deepen the bond. And so when someone wants to connect with me, that's, for me, it's an opportunity for each of my potential clients to check in with their intuition and just notice, I just feel really called to work with this person. I really want to connect with her versus the other sea of animal communicators that are out there today, because that can feel like a really overwhelming choice. So for me, that's like the first step along the intuitive path. And I'm always really curious why pet parents pick me.
Yep.
And I love that. I definitely have tried to create as calm and seamless a process as possible for folks that are coming into my world and wanting to have a session, because often there is something going on.
Yeah.
You know, a year and 2 months ago, I lost my soul bird of 24 years. And that has been a huge journey for me. And you better believe I reached out to colleagues in my field to help me through it. And he's taught me a lot about pet reincarnation. And he's now back with me as Miss Petal. And that's been a fascinating journey. But the first step for somebody, once they recognize kind of that gut or that heart tug, like, I just resonate with what she's all about. I want to connect with her. I'd love to receive support in talking with my pet here in spirit. And so then they just pop out of my website. I have a little intake form. It just helps my pet parent clients prepare for their session, especially for those who have never experienced this. It can be a little nerve-wracking. What do I expect? And what's the outcome? And all. So it's just a little intake form that guides them to think about some questions they have for their animal. Think about maybe what's their intention or their goal for the communication, for the conversation. And they can share a favorite picture with with me if they like. I don't always work with a picture, but it's definitely something that I feel drawn to in some communications. And then what I do is I do, and I found this to be the most pure form of animal communication for me. And I've tried lots of different configurations, but I will record an audio of my real-time conversation with their pet, and I'll send that to them. And then if they would like to connect with me on the phone or on Zoom to do what I call a debrief, maybe ask some follow-up questions, make sure they understand everything that their pet has shared, get clarification if they need to, then they can add that on. And so this way, they have their audio. And I've heard from many of my pet parent clients that they have gone back and listened again and again and again. Because what happens, and especially if it's the first time, and I've done many of these myself over the years and have struggled to take notes and or record it. And then the technology stuff gets in the way. Well, how do I record on Zoom? Or I don't know how to record. Well, let me call you back and we'll use this app. And it's like, let's just take all of that stress out of the mix. I'm going to record it for you.
Yeah.
I'm going to send it to you.
Yeah.
You can listen to it as often as you like. And then if you would like to connect with me, then we can do that as well. So it's kind of an all-in-one option and you pick what feels right for you.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm sure every time they listen, they get a new lesson, a new download, if you will, about something that they maybe haven't heard before, or they didn't hear in the same way. Mm-hmm. All right, before we close.
I know I do.
Before we close, and this would be a whole other podcast on itself, but Shannon just got back from the Galapagos. It was like a bucket list trip, this dream trip. I just want to touch on what was your biggest highlight and what was your biggest lesson? Because I know we were talking a little bit before we hit record and it was just a trip of a lifetime. So what was the biggest highlight, like your best memory from it, and then the biggest lesson that you took away from it?
That's a tough one because there are so many. The first thing that I really noticed is that most of the stuff in my suitcase, I never even used. And it's amazing how little we truly need when we're just living from our heart. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't necessary to bring. In fact, so many of the things that I brought required things like internet connection or Bluetooth that didn't even work on this tiny little primitive remote island of Isabella.
Yeah.
The second thing I noticed was that, and I've known this for many, many moons, but being with these giant animals, the giant tortoises, I spent 2 weeks volunteering with them, which meant I scooped poop and scrubbed bathing areas and fed and picked up stuff and raked and did all the cleaning. And I was blissfully happy. And I cried when I had to leave them. And just, it was such a good reminder of what it feels like when you're doing absolutely what your heart and soul sing to do.
Yeah, that's
and
lovely.
And that kind of draws me to the third piece, because when I was with these animals who were not afraid of humans, they weren't afraid. There's nothing in their culture. The tortoises should have been afraid because they've been predated over the centuries by the ships and the fishermen and all of that. But these animals were not afraid, and it kind of felt like Eden, you know, if I'm going to use a Christian metaphor, but it kind of felt like I kind of forgot about being a human.
Yeah.
And I remembered that we're all more alike than different. We all belong here. And there are so many creative ways to make planet Earth a safe and calm and comfortable home for all of us. And so that I just really came back with an even more renewed passion for just taking off our species goggles, if you will, or changing the prescription in our glasses. And because it renewed me in a way that nothing that I have back home that I traditionally might turn to, like Netflix series. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with Netflix series or scrolling on social. It's like being in nature, just walking with bare feet, keeping company with animals who they don't treat us like we're predators.
Yeah.
Like we're a threat. They just, I mean, we were stepping on Galapagos. There are these wooden benches that have been custom curated for the visitor areas and the lookout points and all that. And they all have a phrase on them that says, "We were made for you." It doesn't mean for us humans.
Yeah.
It's for the sea lions.
Yeah.
And they lay all over them. I mean, even if we wanted to sit on those benches, there isn't room most of the time.
Yeah.
So it's a really great reminder of what our species has kind of forgotten about, which is rewind a few hundred years. And we were still an active and participating part of the greater food chain of life.
Yep. Yeah.
And not so that long it really ago. Brought me back to not that long ago and still occasionally, but for most of us, it's easy to forget that, I mean, I always say if a solar flare knocked out our power grid and me and our dachshund Flash Gordon were released into the backyard to forage up our dinner, I can guarantee you who would be full and who would go hungry, you know?
Yeah.
So tapping into for me, like the intuitive pet parent path that I teach is so impactful because we tune back into our inner wild. We start to rekindle these sensory pathways and intuitive knowings that are there to keep us alive. They're there to keep us safe. They're our best friends and they can guide us in parenting our pet.
Yeah. And touching back on those is important for our survival and the survival of society. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing those lessons. Yeah. That's so sweet. If you keep talking it up, I may lose Scott. He may just move to the Galapagos. That sounds just like the kind of life tempting. He wants.
Well, you know what I was thinking?
It is very tempting.
When you talk about the tortoise and they can live to be like 100 years old or more, right? I think they have huge lifespans.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of wisdom there.
Yeah.
These old guys are roaming around like, oh, here comes another animal communicator.
There they go. I know. And that was really cool too, because the people that were there were from all over the world. We had people from so many different countries and they had all converged on this tiny island to volunteer with the sea turtles and the giant tortoises. And they were so interested. And I would have people during the day ask me, well, have you had any conversations today? Or what did the tortoises say? When we were out, there's this one area where you can go biking or walking, and there are wild tortoises that have either grown up on the island or have been re-released as part of the breeding repopulation program. And we came across this one animal that the longest lived Galapagos tortoise that we were aware of is 175 years old.
Crazy.
I would venture to bet this animal was older. I mean, just talk about it was like staring into the eyes of the soul of our world back when it was just, you know, a single cell organism in the Big Bang.
Yeah.
He probably had
dementia.
Oh, well, maybe we'll all be able to go one day. Shannon, thank you so much for your time. Thank you to you and Petal. You guys, again, next week we are going to be guests on Shannon's podcast, Let's Talk to Animals. Scott and I don't often go to other podcasts, but we're doing a little swap here. Thank you so much for your time and for your love and for all of your intuition. We so appreciate it. And if you guys want to work with Shannon, the links will be in the description. Guys, have a great Wednesday. And in the meantime, keep it quirky.
Thanks, Shannon.
Bye, guys.
Bye for now.
The views and opinions expressed by the hosts, guests, or callers of this program do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Studio 21, Podcast Cafe, the United Podcast Network, its partners or affiliates.